Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI canonizes 7 new saints. Cardinal Wilfrid Fox Napier shares his thoughts regarding some of the most biting issues that have surfaced during the ongoing Synod of Bishops for the new evangelization. And an initiative of daily solidarity for the poor and the homeless of the city shines the light on the sad predicament of many, day in and day out. Sunday was a big day for the Catholic Church, and especially for the Catholic Church in North America, when Pope Benedict XVI named 17th century Mohawk Kateri Te Kakwita the first Native American saint. Another newly named saint is Marianne Cope, a German-born woman who immigrated to the United States as a child, became a nun, and went on to devote 30 years of her life helping lepers in Hawaii. Their canonization, along with that of 5 other saints, was celebrated at a special mass in St. Peter's Square on Sunday morning. Sean Lovett reports.
In his homily during the Mass, Pope Benedict noted that the canonization was taking place as bishops from around the world are gathered in Rome to take part in the General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops. The coincidence between this ecclesiastical meeting and World Mission Sunday, he said, is a happy one, and the Word of God that we've listened to sheds light on both subjects. It shows how to be evangelizers, called to bear witness and to proclaim the Christian message, configuring ourselves to Christ and following his very path. This is true both for the mission, ad gentes, and for the new evangelization. The Pope gave a brief reflection on the life and works of each of the new saints, among them Pedro Calungsod from the Philippines.
Pedro, however, displayed deep faith and charity and continued to catechize his many converts, giving witness to Christ by a life of purity and dedication to the gospel.
St. Pedro was martyred in 1672. Marianne Cope, also canonized today, was born in Germany but moved to the United States at a very young age. She joined the Franciscan order and became Superior General of her congregation. She eventually answered the call to serve the lepers in the Hawaiian island of Molokai.
At a time when little could be done for the suffering from this terrible disease, Marianne Cope showed the highest love, courage, and enthusiasm.
Also today, the canonization of the first Native American saint from North America, Kateri Te Kakwita.
Leading a simple life, Kateri remained faithful to her love for Jesus, to prayer, and to daily mass. Her greatest wish was to know and to do what pleased God.
Speaking in French, the Holy Father prayed, St. Kateri, protectress of Canada and first Native American saint, we entrust to you the renewal of faith in the First Nations and in all of North America. May God bless the First Nations. At the end of the solemn Mass, the Holy Father addressed the faithful before the recitation of the Angelus. In his remarks, he called upon Mary, the Queen of all saints, and turned his thoughts especially to the Marian Shrine of Lourdes, which is experiencing heavy flooding. In particular, said Pope Benedict XVI, we wish today to entrust to the maternal protection of Our Lady all missionaries, priests, religious and lay people, that in every part of the world sow the good seed of the gospel. He prayed too for the Synod of Bishops as they continue to face the challenge of the new evangelization for the transmission of the Christian faith. Pope Benedict concluded his remarks with greetings in several languages to all the pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square.
On the happy occasion of the canonization today, I greet the official delegations and all the English-speaking pilgrims and visitors, especially those from the Philippines, Canada, and the United States of America. May the holiness and witness of the saints inspire us to draw closer to the Son of God, who for such great love came to serve and offer his life for our salvation. God bless you all.
Thanks there to Sean Lovett for that report. Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier is the Archbishop of Durban in South Africa. He's one of the participants at the ongoing Synod of Bishops of the new evangelization. I spoke to him about the Synod proceedings and about some of the main issues of concern surfacing at the meeting. He confesses that the issue brought up during Synod sessions regarding the need to minister to God's flock with more humility has taken him by surprise.
Knowing that most people do go about their work in ministry, knowing that they haven't got the resources or the power to do it, they have to rely on the Lord's grace to do it. But it has come across so strongly, almost to indicate that perhaps one of the failures of the church in the past while has been precisely the perception that the church is proud. The church's leaders are not in contact with normal situations of people on the ground. They are not in sympathy with the people. Perhaps that's what seems to be, that to me seems to be indicating that, at least from the point of view of some of the bishops, that's how they are picking up the message that they're getting. So it's been a bit of a surprise, but at the same time, it's good to know that it's something that leaders are aware of, and hopefully that when we come out with a document at the end, that's going to be reflected as well.
What I think came out as well is that maybe the church hierarchy at the top is a little bit disconnected from the people at the bottom, especially as regards family.
I think one has to make distinctions between different parts of the world. I would like to think, and I think I'm not too far wrong, that in Africa in general, well, let me narrow it down to South Africa, Southern Africa. I think that in general in Southern Africa, we have a fairly close working relationship with our ordinary folk in the church. And it's more by necessity than by our planning, you know. It was by the fact that we've had to rely on catechists. We've had to look now when we didn't have the means to pay the catechists, employ full-time catechists. We're now having to use lay people in those positions. And if you're going to work with lay people in that area, such an important area of communicating the faith, then you have to be in touch with them. Otherwise, there's going to be a terrible disjuncture between what you're saying in theory and what is actually happening on the ground. So from that point of view, I would say there's probably a distinction to be made among the different local churches, certainly in some churches, and yeah, in Europe, I would say, in particular. Just judging from some of the reactions I was listening to during the Eucharistic Congress in Dublin in June, where there was a constant complaint, the bishops are not in touch with the laity. And I had to step in a few times and say, hold on now, don't generalize like that. Because we are currently in the process in South Africa, for a second time round, entering into a process which is going on for a number of years of consultation with the laity, just to find out where do we stand and are we on the same wavelength and so on. So I think there are some hopeful signs that are coming across during the synod as well, where you get the feeling that beyond the words that are being spoken, there is a real communication there that's taking place between the leadership and the membership of the church.
Just recently in South Africa, the church has been very much involved, and it has from the beginning in social issues. So you must be in touch. I was speaking to Bishop Seoka, the Anglican Archbishop who negotiated the mine settlement, etc. Is that kind of perspective coming into the Synod talks at all?
To some extent it is, you know, but I don't think too many people are talking perhaps at that intimate level of particular incidents or events that have been happening in their countries. But one gets the impression that with a lot of the bishops, when they're speaking from what they know their people are saying, and they've heard it from their own people, what the situation is like on the ground. One area that keeps on coming up is the family, and just how weak our families have become, and how would I say, desperate almost the church has to try to make that one of the priority concerns of its ministry. Get the families right and so many other things will come right. It's a heck of a battle because the whole culture, certainly the Western culture, is anti-marriage, it's anti-family, it's anti all the traditional values, both gospel and natural values, I would call human values. And so there's going to have to be a real concerted effort there. And probably what you asked about earlier on, we're not going to be able to do that by issuing high-sounding theological documents. We're going to have to be down there with the people at the level where they are and encouraging those movements that are developing family life and giving them a real boost where we can.
Would you say these values are alive and well in your part of the world?
Look, they are, but you can't get over the fact that for perhaps 24 hours of the day, 23 hours out of the 24, people are getting counter values preached at them, thrown at them, just insinuated, presumed that, well, you are subscribed to these values as well. So when we come out with what we would call basic Christian Catholic values, we would really have an uphill battle, I would say. We're swimming against the tide in many instances. But where I believe we have a chance to really make an impression is lots of young people at the moment are searching and asking themselves questions. They are really looking for somebody to give them clear answers. They mightn't carry out everything they're told, but I think they want to know what is the right thing and what's the wrong thing to do.
Cardinal Napier, is there any particular intervention that has struck you up till today, of course?
There have been a lot that have come out and been very forceful. But the one was a layman from Syria made an appeal to the church, please come and be with us and help us and so on. That really touched me. It was really straight from his heart. And, you know, because we get flooded with this newscast every 15 minutes, you're getting something. You tend to distance yourself from it. When you hear an appeal from a man who is there living in it and you can sense that this guy is really desperate and he wants the church to know how desperate the situation is, that was really touching. Others that have been equally touching, I think, have been this one by the Archbishop Alex from Bulawayo in Zimbabwe, where he was talking about the young people drifting away from the church. One got the same kind of feeling. Here's a man that's really, really concerned. He's engaged with these young people, and he's worried about what's happening to them. They're being drawn away from the Catholic Church to these Pentecostals. And it's on a false premise that they're being drawn away. Most of the time, it's a good feeling and so on, but you can't go through life looking for good feelings. You've got to meet the hard times that actually help you to grow and to mature and to really bring out the best qualities that are in you. So that was another one that really did touch me.
You will go back to South Africa at the end of this with a mosaic of ideas and images and words. What will you take back with you? What is going to be constructive for you once you're back home?
Perhaps the thing I'm going to take back is the methodology that the synod follows. In other words, rather than simply just giving us a document which describes all the situations, you get people telling you about their situation. Sometimes they choose to talk about the theology, they're repeating the theology, but most of the time they're describing the situations in which they live. And because those situations are so varied, you're, as it were, being exposed to a whole myriad of different situations. So you get an idea that, gee, when you've been through that experience, now you've got to look at what is God saying to this gathering through the scriptures, through the other theological reflections that have been taking place. And then where do we go from here? What do we go out of here from? Well, quite obviously, the fact that it's about evangelization, and evangelization is about going and doing what Jesus did and doing it with him, then it has to make an impact on how one goes back and tries carrying the message across. This is what the church at its right at the center is thinking about, this whole area of evangelization. These are some of the areas of concern that we have to address, and we've got to start, maybe because it says new evangelization, new approaches need to be looked at, new methods need to be approached, but above all a new fervor, a new enthusiasm, a new ardor needs to be developed. And I think that's some of the things that they're working through in my mind all the time.
I think you have a lot to contribute in the development of your country.
I think we do. I think as bishops we really do. You know, since 1994, we sort of said, well, we've achieved what we had set out to do, to get social justice at least into the currency of what people were thinking and talking about, but also into our constitution, our way of life and so on. And then we withdrew and got about our own business, our pastoral plans and what have you. Now we're realizing that, you know, we've got to be right back there because the guys are messing up in a big way. And our task wasn't really over. We just needed to redirect it, perhaps, and this is the opportunity, I believe. This new evangelization couldn't be at a better time, I think, for us in South Africa to make a new start, because that's where I feel a lot of people are at the moment, saying 18 years down the line from democracy, and we're in the same old trap. It's these guys getting wealthy, thinking of themselves only, making promises and not keeping them. And I think this is where there's such a potential for frustration, for anger to go out of control, that just to say we're going to go in there to control it isn't enough. I think we've got to go in there to channel it so that it's the energies are used in a way that's going to build up the country and the society as well.
That was Cardinal Wilfred Fox Napier, Archbishop of Durban in South Africa. The tradition of solidarity is high on the agenda here in Rome, also thanks to the goodwill and to the good work of the St. Egidio community, a movement of lay people dedicated to evangelization and charity. Yes, St. Egidio runs one of the city's largest soup kitchens, a much-needed service for so many people, Italian and non, who don't even know where their next meal is coming from. And the more we see people looking in rubbish bins in search of something to eat, the more we must realise that food, or the lack of it, is one of the most serious poverty problems of so many of our neighbours, right here, even in Europe's richest cities. And Rome is no exception. The vertiginous rise in the cost of living and the hundreds of thousands of penniless migrants and refugees in search of a better life are the main reasons there are more and more people out there on our streets every day with an empty stomach. I've often thought of signing up as a volunteer at a soup kitchen. It's a simple thing that anyone can do, but I never have. I have, however, met someone who has done just that. He's Benedictine monk Timothy Wright. And when he's not globetrotting for the work he does for interreligious dialogue, he's off to the soup kitchen at Sant'Egidio here in Rome.
First of all, I was invited by one of the sisters here who goes every week, and I thought, I've always, wherever I've been, I've always wanted to do something which was to help poor people, to help the disadvantaged, whatever way it was. And this seemed to be an obvious thing. Friday afternoon, go down to the Sant'Egidio in Trastevere and to work. And I didn't know what to expect, but sister said, come on. So off I went.
The community of Sant'Egidio, by the way, is a movement of lay people dedicated to evangelization and charity. Since its beginning in 1988, the soup kitchen has given hospitality to more than 100,000 people and has served 2,200,000 meals.
And you turn up and we arrive, at buses permitting, at about 4:10, and we have 45 minutes to set the room up, which means getting the tables set up, chairs down, tables, places laid for the two rooms, each of which will take about 100 people. Then, around about 4:45, the door's opening at 5:00, the other volunteers will start to arrive who are going to help out on the tables. And they're coming from, largely from the religious houses, in the session that I do, they come from the religious houses in Rome, nuns, sisters, seminarians, priests, superiors, lay people, men and women. It's a wonderful mix of people and you gradually get to know them. 5:00, the people come in, the men and women come in, mainly men, but there are a few women who come. Having gone through a process of registration and questioning and help by the Sant'Egidio community.
I was curious to hear exactly what goes on.
Basically, they come in, they sit down, and it's slightly complicated because the meal operates on a system whereby there are two courses. So when one person sits at your table, whoever it is, you immediately go and serve them. You don't wait till the table fills up. And the person will sit down and you go primo secondo, which means do you want the pasta and do you want the main course? To which the answer usually is yes, primo secondo. So you go over to the serving area, you pick up a basket with two pieces of bread in it, a piece of fruit, and then you go and collect a plate of pasta and a piece of, which can be meat and vegetables, something like that. And you take it to them and you give it to them. And that is the meal that they have. They may ask for soup in place of pasta, or they may ask for formaggio, which is a block of cheese, instead of the secondo, or any permutation of the various options. And they come in regularly, and they're coming from a huge variety of backgrounds.
Father Timothy told me that the attention to the dignity and to the personality of everybody is expressed in the care of the environment and in the courteous attitude of the volunteers serving at the table. And, he said, particular attention is paid to the meal that considers the eating habits of the guests with respect to their religious tradition. For example, in consideration of the presence of Muslims, pork or wine are never served.
What struck me immediately was I thought, well, the homeless people in Rome, when I first arrived, being quite ignorant, I thought, well, the homeless people in Rome won't be such a big problem. Rome's a nice city. The Catholic Church is pretty active, should be getting its act together. Example to the world. Well, I was amazed, A, the number of poor people you find around Rome.
A lot of old people, aren't there?
A lot of old people, but also some very handicapped people. I've seen people going around on skateboards because they've got no feet. And I myself, being not an expert here in Rome, will ask the question, you know, well, why can't we do something more for them? And there is one answer, which is there is quite a lot that goes on, and it's a question of going to the right place. Anyway, when they come into Sant'Egidio, and these are young people, older people, and people who've been coming for years, people who know the system, and live a wandering life. And some of them, you can tell, are very relaxed when they come in. They look at you, you greet them, and when you get to know them, you chat a bit, and they recognise you. Others, you come in and they're much more, obviously, recently here, worried about their future, worried about what's happening. Come and sit down, you say, prima secondo, yes, fine. And you give them what they want, you smile with them, welcome them, etc. But it's, you sense that there's a distance there and there's an anxiety. Others, you sit down, once you start talking, you suddenly discover that, like me, not very fluent in Italian, and so they prefer to speak English. And they will come from countries in Africa, Eritrea. I've had one or two from Ethiopia, and I met one or two from Sierra Leone and other parts of Africa. And you can get into quite, for a little, because it's quite a busy time, you can't have a long conversation, but you can have a little bit of a conversation.
I can imagine that a lot of them might want to talk. I mean, a lot of them must be very lonely.
I think so, but on the other hand, you do get the impression that a number of them are quite friendly to each other. They come in sort of groups and they sit down. And I would imagine, though, that a lot of them are probably, I mean, this is what I don't know, but once you arrive and you've got nowhere to go, and the whole question of whether you're legal or not legal, that's an issue which I'm not an expert in. But if you are, it's not quite got the right papers yet, it must be quite a lonely business. And I think the Sant'Egidio community are doing their best to try and help people in order to facilitate that sort of thing.
Do you see people who maybe have led quite an ordinary life? I mean, they've always been poor, but they've managed to survive. And now maybe they're old and their pensions don't cover expenses. Yeah. And they find themselves in the predicament of having to go to a soup kitchen. Do you find people like that?
I think
can it happen to anyone?
It can happen to anyone. And some of the people you look at, you say to yourself, because they look a very different sort of person, and perhaps they're coming because, as you say, they've fallen out, they haven't got enough money, they've lost their money, they're coming to get a meal. Because the soup kitchen, I think, only operates Wednesdays, Fridays and Saturdays. And so they're providing a good meal three times a week. And it may be that that's enough to give them the bridge between not having anything at all, having just enough, and to sustain them for the other 3 days. But you do get some people you see coming through, not that I've had any chance to talk to them, but you say, yes, well, they. You feel like saying, well, you probably had a wonderful life before and something has happened. And that's, I find that always very difficult and very sad.
That's something I learnt a few years ago, when I did a series of programmes on street people. It can happen to anyone. It's so easy to fall through the cracks of society and find oneself on the edge, marginalized, lonely, and even hungry.
It must be a very sad job. Should we call it a job? No, it's not really a job, but it must be a sad, in a way, thing to do.
What the great gift of this, and I was talking in terms of gift, is that it makes me aware that there are a lot of people in our world who live lives as simple, as deprived as the people who come into the soup kitchen. And it makes one ask a lot of questions about the way we construct our system to help. And as I said earlier, I've travelled a little bit in various countries of the world, and everywhere you find that there is always the very small group who are phenomenally well off, a middle group who are okay, and then a bottom group who, you know, who are there because they can't get out of it. And at the end of the day, if the economy of the country is strong enough to give them jobs, a lot of them will get jobs and can go up the ladder. If it's not strong enough, they end up forming this group of people who, of course, you know, have a resentment, that they're not welcomed, they've been pushed out of their own country for survival. The people who migrate out of a country, we always have to remember, are always the more talented, because they're the ones who've got the get up and go and say, well, I've had enough of this, I'm going. And we'll cross mountains and take boats across seas and all this sort of thing. And the illegal immigrant, to use a phrase that is often spoken of, are the people who have got the energy, who have got the gifts, and have got the vision to say, I can't do any worse here. It's better for me to go. Now, in most countries, those people eventually will find a footstep and make their way up. But the people who, for one reason or another, don't get the right steps on the ladder, they often fall back to the bottom. And they're the people who so often are left behind.
And that's why he does it. Father Timothy told me it's not only to help these people and give them a sense there's some material help, but also to give them a sense of being worthy and valuable and lovable as they are. And finally, I must tell you that as of next week, that's Monday, the 28th of October, the feature programme will no longer be available on these frequencies in this half-hour format. Our weekend service will not be affected. However, you can find all our news and interviews on our website. That's simply rv.va and click on the English World icon. Please do get in touch to let us know what you think of these changes and how we can continue to provide the best service to all our listeners. We look forward to hearing from you on our email address, which is english@vatiradio.va, or on our mailing address, that is Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia No. 3, 00120, Vatican City. You've been listening to Vatican Radio's English feature programme. I'm Linda Bordoni. Goodbye. Laudetur Jesus Christus.